This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, November 10th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Earlier this year, the video conferencing service Zoom suddenly became the go-to platform for all kinds of meetings, from work calls to happy hours to public events like lectures. But it's not anything goes. Zoom has rules, and that's drawn the company into the tricky role of policing content on its service. The company's been criticized by some for blocking meetings around politically sensitive topics. Our reporter Aaron Tilley will join us to discuss after these headlines. The world's largest technology investor, SoftBank, reports a profit of more than $6 billion in the last quarter, driven by some of its portfolio companies' rising share prices and valuations. The strong performance continues a comeback for the investor group. Last fiscal year, the company reported a $9 billion annual loss, its worst results ever. Apple is holding yet another special event later today, the third one this fall. The company hasn't explicitly said what it's for, but analysts are expecting they might introduce new laptops powered by Apple's own microchips. Here's our reporter Tim Higgins with more.
There's a couple things going on here. Apple turned to Intel many years ago when Steve Jobs was then the CEO, and it was about really making Apple's computers more competitive against PCs and more powerful. At the time, you'll recall Apple was not as big as it is today. And something that's occurred now is what we've seen the current CEO, Tim Cook, really pushing Apple to bring some of these core competencies in-house. Your iPhone has a specially designed chip. It allows the iPhone to do special things that Apple has designed it to do. And now it wants to do that with its computer lineup. Experts predict that it will allow Apple to do several things, get more battery life, have faster computers, and potentially save money. Now, we're not quite sure how they might save that money, if they'll lower the price of the computer or perhaps put more features in the computer or perhaps just be more profitable. That's yet to be seen, but it really is kind of part of Tim Cook's kind of strategy over the last few years that we've seen of kind of owning that part of its competencies.
And the Federal Trade Commission says it's settled a case with Zoom over concerns about how the service handles user privacy. In its complaint, the FTC alleged that for at least the past 4 years, Zoom promised users a level of data encryption it didn't actually provide. As part of the settlement, Zoom employees will have to review its product for security flaws and obtain a third-party assessment of its progress every other year. In a statement, Zoom said it had already addressed the issues the FTC identified and that it was continuing to enhance its encryption levels. That's not all Zoom has been under scrutiny for recently. The company has also been catching heat for blocking some public events. We'll have more on that after the break. When the pandemic set in, Zoom quickly became a lifeline for all those stuck in lockdowns. But as it's grown, the platform is being drawn into a fraught area that's caused problems for much bigger tech companies: the need to police the content on its service. And Zoom has been criticized in recent months for blocking some public events around politically sensitive topics. Here to explain is our reporter Aaron Tilley. Aaron, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So Zoom has gotten some attention for blocking these events. What have we been seeing?
Yeah, so Zoom has been having to make tough decisions over the past few months. It's having to decide which events it's going to allow and which events it's not going to allow. These are public events that are posted on social media around politically sensitive issues, such as the Tiananmen Square massacre and also things relating to Palestinian rights. So this has happened several times over the past few months, and this is something new for the company. The company's having to take stances on whether something is following its rules, whether it's following local rules in a country such as China, and how it enforces that. And it's gotten them into some hot water as far as U.S. lawmakers are concerned in regards to the China issue, as well as activists calling censorship to block their event around Palestinians. So this has been something that's new for them, and they've had to deal with it.
And can you just give us an example of some of the back and forth?
Yeah, so the first time this really popped up for Zoom was in June. They were responding to the Chinese government orders to block events relating to the Tiananmen Square massacre in 1989. These were events kind of in memorial of that event, and activists were holding it. And the issue that happened with Zoom is that they blocked U.S. accounts around this event, and this really got them into hot water with, you know, calls of following Chinese censorship overseas, and U.S. lawmakers got involved. Marco Rubio and a number of other senators wrote letters to the company asking what rules are they following? You know, if they're applying this China censorship rule to U.S. users, U.S. citizens, what does that mean for this platform? What is this? What kind of rules are they following? And Zoom said, we made a mistake. We weren't prepared for this, and they went too far, and their tools weren't ready to in order to follow the rules of local Chinese government and apply them in a way that doesn't block users outside of that jurisdiction. And so they said they've made changes around that, around their tools, and that they will be much more sensitive around handling these government demands. They said we made a mistake.
And so what are Zoom's policies around making decisions like these?
Yeah, so their terms and services and their usage policy has been evolving during this time as they grow, and they've gotten really popular, and they've had to deal with these issues. And they've started building up a trust and safety team. And this team kind of encapsulates a lot of issues that happen on Zoom relating to privacy and security. But this is also the team that is going to be making decisions around whether or not to block these kind of politically sensitive events. And so this is a new team for them, and they're building it up, and something they hadn't really had to think about until now when they've had this booming success during the corona crisis.
And is that team, you know, evaluating based on a specific set of policies?
So the policies they have in place, they're pretty broad. You know, it's things you'd expect, like you can't break the law, you can't promote violence, display nudity, or a number of other infractions. And these policies, you know, are you know, somewhat similar to any other platform where you're communicating or sharing content, but certainly not as sweeping as social media companies, where they have to have really expansive terms of use policies in order to encapsulate all the disinformations happening on this platform. So not as expansive as social media companies, but everything you'd expect as far as, you know, making sure your events are abiding by the local laws and not promoting violence and things like that.
And to be clear, is Zoom monitoring the meetings themselves?
Yeah, so they say they're not monitoring content, and instead they're making decisions based off of being alerted on events. So if an event is coming up, some group or government will go to them and say, this is breaking the law, or we're against this, or this is violating your policies, so you should take it down. And then Zoom is making a decision there. So they're not, they say they're not like watching these events as they're happening and making a decision. This is something they're deciding ahead of time.
Yeah. And as you mentioned earlier, Zoom has taken some criticism for the decisions they've made. They have that in common with several other tech companies. I'm thinking of social media companies in particular. How does Zoom's approach compare with the other companies' efforts on this front?
Yeah, I mean, there is a fundamental difference between what Zoom does and what a social media company like Twitter and Facebook, what they do, because the social media platforms are about, you know, sharing content, and that Zoom has always been fundamentally just a communications platform. But as the company has evolved and, you know, grown during the coronavirus pandemic, it has become more of a platform where people are holding events, and that is expanding for Zoom with this new products like OnZoom, which is their kind of events platform. And so this is probably only going to grow for them. I think the tough thing for Zoom, there were so many unexpected things that happened to the company with the rise in popularity they've experienced over the past year, that they just weren't prepared for many, many things that happened during this time period. And they've had to react constantly kind of on the defensive each time. The first kind of issues that popped up were Zoom bombing, where people would come into meetings uninvited and create havoc and chaos. That was sort of the first issues that popped up. And then now what's really happening for the company is that it's become this big kind of platform where a lot of people are living their lives and they're having to make these tough decisions that they were never prepared to make. So they're right now scrambling to hire up a team to deal with that. They're having to develop their policies and make tough calls. And I think the company, they're still a small company, I think, compared to a lot of other platforms. Facebook has 15,000 people monitoring content on their platform, whereas Zoom is 3,000 people total as a company. So I think they're going to have to quite expand that significantly as they grow as a company.
All right, our reporter Aaron Tilley, thanks for your reporting.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.